May it please the court, my name is Julie Murray and I represent plaintiff appellant Hayes Latin. The issue for decision here is whether the lower court erred in construing the applicable law. The court relied on the Hamilton case that this court decided to conclude that to create a bright line rule that in all cases, failure of a bankruptcy petitioner to disclose in writing a potential claim bars the subsequent action on that. The lower court cited Hamilton its decision and failed to engage in the balancing test required by the United States Supreme Court in the Financial versus Hayes case.
You don't think the court balanced the equities at all?
I don't see that, Your Honor. Neither in the written order or in the transcript that there was any balancing of the equities. If you read through the book, one sentence in the order that says Hayes law simply holds that If in this case the lower court had balanced equities, I submit that the purpose of judicial stop would not have been served by Warren's claim. As Judge Jones said in his order, Mr. Hayes did disclose verbally his potential asset against the funeral. He also lied because he lied about doing it. And he was undisputed that he did not intend to see the court. Mr. Pat, Trustee Flood, also submitted an affidavit form that was not discussed in the written order that, in fact, the trustee that he also had advised Mr. Latin not to do anything to be perfect. It's important to note that this is the case. Mr. Latin is unrepresented by this. What's the case decided, not by this circuit, but by other circuits, or cases in which another corporation is represented by counsel?
Counsel, do you think Hamilton can be fairly read to have a bright line rule?
No, Your Honor, although there is that sentence that was acknowledged by two district courts, that is confusing, admittedly. Sentence that said, regardless, failure to list in writing your asset bars the claim. So I would not admit that it creates a bright line rule, but I certainly understand that perhaps by the judge interpreted that way. If you read Hamilton, Hamilton did balance the equities, and what is distinctive about Hamilton is there is no doubt there was a contingency. The trustee dismissed the lower court claim after he had already been charged with death, but such that an opinion, but something happened to make him actually dismiss the bankruptcy. And the language there was that there's a lack of truthfulness under oath, bad faith, and a failure to cooperate by the petitioner. That is not the situation here in any way, shape, or form. So even though there is no express discussion in Hamilton of intent, the prior Ninth Circuit cases and a fair reading of Hamilton certainly suggests that intent is a very important factor in administering judicial estoppel.
What language in Hamilton would you point to that says that intent is relevant here?
It doesn't. There's no language that says specifically intent is relevant here. Absolutely not. But if you read what I think is going back to reading the Ninth Circuit opinion, it cites to the trustee's opinion and also to the district court's opinion that it was counsel that was brought on the court and there was lack of truthfulness under oath. So, no, there is nothing that specifically said that. But if you look at the Johnson versus Arden Department of Human Resources case, the Halpern versus Ferguson case, the Henry Goring case cited by New Hampshire versus Maine, there's a clear thread throughout this court suggesting that intent is something that must be considered in balancing the equities, determining what is in this.
Counsel, you gave us what you thought were the equities on Mr. Latin's side, that is, that he disclosed this to Trustee Pack and that he was unrepresented by counsel. Now I'm going to ask you to work against the interests of your client and tell us what are the equities on the other side. What happens when Mr. Latin fails to disclose a claim in bankruptcy and then comes forward and pops up later on and decides to press the claim?
Fails to disclose in writing the claim, Your Honor? You talk about in writing he fails to disclose it?
Right. He discloses it to PAC, he does not disclose it to the bankruptcy court. That's right. The important thing, is that the court has been deprived of this, even though the party seeking bankruptcy is fully aware of these facts. So who else may have been damaged here?
In this particular case...
Was Pro Systems a creditor here?
Pro Systems itself was...
Yeah,
No, Your Honor, I don't believe that Pro Systems itself was a creditor here in the bankruptcy schedule. The unit was a creditor under the disability overpayment that Mr. Lattin did set forth under that.
And they are a party here?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So we have a party here who was also a creditor in the bankruptcy, mm-hmm. and has presumably been denied whatever benefits would have accrued from Mr. Lattin disclosing this claim, this asset.
Well, and that's why I think the trustee's opinion is important here, because he consulted legal counsel and came to the opinion that it would be an exempt asset.
But it wouldn't be the trustee's call to make.
Mr. Lattin didn't know that. And we're looking at what did Mr. Lattin do to the court, essentially, is what we're considering.
Well, you can't deny, though, that there was an advantage to not having to defend this against the creditor's challenge to the exemption, right? Because the creditors could have challenged whether or not the asset was exempt.
Absolutely, they could have. There's no evidence in this case that they would have, but they could have certainly.
But they didn't get the opportunity to because it wasn't disclosed.
You're correct, Your Honor. And what I would just ask the court to keep looking back at is there's no suggestion that Mr. Lattin would have done exactly what the trustee did, even if the trustee erred. Should Mr. Lattin's good faith attempts to disclose, albeit wrong, far different. And, you know, judicial estoppel is supposed to be used sparingly and only in appropriate situations. What is the public policy that's going to be advanced if we bar Mr. Lattin's claim? I don't know if there'd be any deterrent in the future, because he would go back, I mean, the next time there's no suggestion that he would not do the same exact thing he did before or any other petitioner if they're not represented. So I don't think that what his failure should be translate into judicial assault, because there simply wasn't an intent to deceive. That's not
what do we do with the fact that he was not represented by counsel? I mean, why is that unum? Why does unum have to sort of suffer the consequences of the petitioner's failure to get counsel here?
Because the unum wants to apply judicial assault to this claim.
Right, but why is it unum? Why does it become unum's problem if the other side fails to get counsel?
Why does that become Unum's problem?
Yeah.
I don't think it is Unum's problem. I think it just is something that must be considered determining whether this claim should be barred. I mean, obviously, Unum can't determine whether there was, you know, the petitioner is to be represented or not represented, but in this case, recall that, you know, they put on notice as a creditor, and throughout their briefs, they say how they knew that.
If Lattin had secured counsel, would this asset have been left off the books?
Shouldn't have been.
It shouldn't have been, and that turns out to be Lattin's problem, doesn't it? I mean, there's sort of a self-help here. He could have hired counsel in his bankruptcy and gotten good advice. He didn't. He didn't disclose all of his assets.
Is there an affirmative obligation for a petitioner to hire counsel?
Well, only if you want to have the benefit of the fullest extent of the bankruptcy laws.
None of the cases I looked at discussed that particular aspect, Your Honor. So I
understand he wants to save money here, and I don't blame him at all.
Right.
For that, I'm not assessing sort of fault on that. Mm-hmm. But there are some consequences here to his decision not to require counsel.
Okay.
And one of the consequences are that he has been sort of the beneficiary of having omitted something from his filing.
Well, again, there was something omitted from his filing. The question is, did he have anything to do with it being omitted from his file?
He definitely had something to do with it. It was his responsibility to put down everything, regardless of whether he talked to the trustee. It's still the petitioner's obligation to make sure that the schedule is complete.
And he didn't do that, Your Honor. And the question I would, the issue, the cases I read in the Ninth Circuit would not therefore bar his claim.
But there was your strongest case?
In the circuit on that?
Yes.
The Johnson versus Oregon Department of Human Resources is most probably the strongest case in this circuit.
Is that a bankruptcy case?
No, that was an ADA case. The bank, there's, the Hamilton is the bankruptcy case. The other case that Johnson cites, however, is the Ryan Operations case, which is a Third Circuit case. In the other case discussed by the Pellet series, the United case, which is also a Third Circuit case, But in the Ryan operations case, it was a bankruptcy case, and there was strong language to the fact that there's no motive to conceal, there would have been a different outcome, there's no proof that there would have been a different outcome if, in fact, there had been a written disclosure. So the strong bankruptcy case, Your Honor, in my opinion, is the Johnson case, which is the APA case, but the language is strong that unless it's a conduit, unless it's deliberate manipulation, you've got to be more careful before you apply judicial estoppel because it's simply not fair. Judge Biden's comments notwithstanding. And you also have to look at, you know, the advantages or the disadvantages of suing the petitioner for not disclosing this. In this case, at least the trustee Pack, but the driver wrong, said that there would not be a disadvantage for estoppel for failing to disclose this.
All right. Thank you, counsel. You've exceeded your time. We'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May it please the court. Good morning. Lawrence Kasten for the appellees. I'd like to follow up on a point, Judge Bybee, that you were raising about the lack of counsel. Mr. Lattin didn't have counsel, but he actually did pretty well. If you look at the supplemental excerpts, page 52, I think it's an important page. That's the page of the bankruptcy petition that requires the debtor to identify those assets he claims are exempt. Mr. Lattin identified no fewer than 7 such assets, retirement account, clothing, checking account, and he even got the statute, the Nevada statute that provides the exemption. It's the very same statute that he's now arguing on appeal gave him an exemption with respect to his disability payments. So he listed 7 assets. He conspicuously omitted his disability payments claim. And now he's here saying, nevertheless, I should be permitted to pursue them.
You're not suggesting that he deliberately did this. I mean, it appears from the record fairly clear that he was advised by the trustee in bankruptcy, you don't have to list these, and that had the force of the trustee in bankruptcy going to his counsel and counsel advising the trustee, and then the trustee coming back to Mr. Lattin and saying, no, that's exempt. You need not put it on.
Here are the facts we know. We know that he listed 7 assets that he claimed were exempt. We know he knew enough to ask the trustee the question. Yet, he didn't, in his petition 2 months earlier, identify that very same claim that he asked the trustee about. Deliberate? No. Intentional? Well, he filled out the forms and he answered the questions and did not respect his claim or his disability policy. I think this gets to a point, though, that counsel's argued pretty strongly about whether intent to deceive is required. Counsel cites the Johnson case. As the court noted, that is not a bankruptcy case. Hamilton is a later case, and it is a bankruptcy case. And it cites many cases, the same cited in others, including the Inouye Postal Claims case. And I think that's the best case about what level of standard is required by the debtor when they omit a claim on a schedule. And that's also a bankruptcy case. And there what the court said was, and this is also what this court said to Hamilton, disclosure is crucial in bankruptcy. It's the whole keystone of bankruptcy. A debtor gains something very significant in bankruptcy. Disclosure is important. So the Inouye Postal case says, we're only going to recognize inadvertence in 2 very narrow circumstances. 1, where the claimant didn't know about the case, or 2, where there was no motive to conceal because no advantage was gained. Well, we know the disclosure here that Mr. Lattin knew about it when he concedes that. With respect to what advantage was gained here, the court's already identified 1. No creditor was given the opportunity to litigate an exemption claim. But there was a 2nd significant advantage that Mr. Lattin gained here. He owed Unum over $60,000. That's undisputed. In fact, there was considerable evidence in the record that the reason he declared bankruptcy was in order to retire that debt. He wrote a letter to Unum where he talked to counsel saying, I can't afford to pay you back. This may force me to bankruptcy. He scheduled that debt without scheduling his corresponding litigation plan. As a result, he obtained a discharge debt. Unum cannot go after that money without violating the discharge injunction. At a minimum, if Mr. Lattin identified his litigation plan.
So did Unum get any of the $60,000?
No, Your Honor. If he had identified that claim in his bankruptcy petition, at least under bankruptcy law, Unum would have had an offset claim. So that if Mr. Lattin ultimately prevailed on his risk, and gets future benefits, you can offset those benefits by the $60,000.
Counsel, do you take issue with opposing counsel's representation that the district court failed to balance the equities in this case?
No, Your Honor, and I'm not asking for a bright-line test. I don't think the trial court imposed a bright-line test. I think this divining what was in the district court's head by looking solely at the opinion I'm not sure accurate. The trial court could have entered a one-line order, and we'd still be here on appeal, and the question would still be the same. Did the trial court abuse its discretion on these facts, finding judicial estoppel? And I think that's important. This is an abuse of discretion standard. Maybe the district court could have reasonably done something else, maybe not. The question is, did it abuse its discretion in finding judicial estoppel on these facts?
So you are arguing a bright-line test, though, aren't you? Aren't you saying that because of the nature of the bankruptcy inquiry, that judicial estoppel must apply differently in the bankruptcy context than in other contexts? Because there's a legion of cases that say misrepresentation is one of the essential elements to applying judicial estoppel in other contexts. Deliberate misrepresentation, what you've referred to as scienter. And here you're saying, it shouldn't apply with equal force in the bankruptcy context. Isn't that advocating a bright-line rule peculiar to bankruptcy cases?
I don't think it's advocating a bright-line rule. I mean, when I say that, I am arguing that it's different in bankruptcy cases. Absolutely wrong. But I guess the question is, if the trial court had decided on these facts not to apply judicial estoppel, I'd have to be here arguing that that was an abuse of discretion. And I think the question is where the facts can admit two reasonable acts of discretion, whether this court should reverse. I think that's what the standard means. But it's not a bright-line test, Your Honor. But I think a failure to recognize Hamilton's application here could lead to much more pernicious results on the other side. What if Mr. Lattin's claim here were not, I talked to the trustee, but instead, I Googled. I looked at Google. I figured I have an exemption. I don't need to worry them. A friend can tell me. I'm not sure that those are significantly different cases. I admit they're somewhat different, but I don't think... I think it's difficult to affirm Mr. Lattin's case, but not also open the door for those same kinds of arguments. I'm just wondering why are bankruptcy cases different? I really would say that the postal planning case is the best authority on this point. It really discusses what should we call true inadvertence with scheduling planning, and that case is cited here. If I could also talk about the Ryan case that opposing counsel cited, the Ryan case is a Third Circuit case. And I think what's important in that case is the court distinguished its prior decision in Oneida. Oneida was also a Third Circuit case. What happened, what happened in the Oneida case was that a party scheduled a debt to a creditor, but didn't schedule a corresponding claim. That's exactly these facts. And the Third Circuit there said, that's enough of an advantage gain for application of judicial estoppel. Precisely what happened here. The scheduling of a debt payment, but not the corresponding claim that would allow an offset. And the Ryan court that the proposal counsel discusses very carefully distinguished the United States to make clear that it wasn't talking about that particular circumstance. I hope I've answered all the court's questions. If there are other questions, unless there are other questions, I'm prepared to say.
It appears there are not. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Counsel, we'll give you 1 minute for rebuttal.
There's no evidence in the record below that that Mr. Black had he actually written on schedule to his claim is, you know, would have resulted in any different result. That is what was acknowledged in the Ryan case. And also, with respect to...
Okay, what about counsel's claim that Unum would have asked for an offset against any future claims?
The convenient argument right now, Your Honor, simply there's no evidence below that that was done. There was no affidavit.
Well, how would they know? The claim wasn't disclosed.
The claim wasn't disclosed. That's correct. Although they did have knowledge of the pending litigation, they kept talking about it in briefs, and they were advised of that they put on notice that they had a claim at the creditors' meeting. That apparently they didn't show up at the creditors' meeting. So I don't submit that there is any legitimate basis on which one could conclude that they were ever going to make a claim on a potentially exempt asset.
Why wouldn't they?
Because it would be an exempt asset. Now, as to the offset issue...
Right, the offset. I think it's the critical
thing. The offset issue, as I've said in my briefs, if you allow this claim to proceed, that they have the right to an offset. Absolutely. I mean, he's not going to...
I guess the debt has already been discharged?
Absolutely, Your Honor. I mean, but if he's stopped in bankruptcy, he doesn't proceed with the claim. He doesn't go forward and proceed with the claim. Everybody's going to go on their own way. He's never going to have any liquidated claim against which to offset. If you allow the claim to go forward, he would absolutely.
What's the ad damnum clause here? What's his claim for damages in your suit?
Past benefits and be put back on claim.
About how much?
Well, it's $2,865. He's in his 50s. I mean, it's well in excess of the offset. I believe his monthly payment is about $3,900 to Social Security offset. So we would be talking several hundred thousand dollars. I don't have a calculator. It would be. I mean, there's no risk that if this is prevailed, that he would be in a position to pay him back. And we always maintain that it would be disingenuous to number one quarter set of costs. So they would have a risk to offset that.
And so what you're asking is effectively that you be allowed to continue acknowledging that there will be an offset, and you're sort of put in the same position that you would have been had he disclosed the asset in the first place.
I guess that is what I'm asking, Your Honor, and just to consider the equities in this particular case, which I don't believe the lower court did, and I do think Hamilton applies. I wouldn't say it doesn't.
Was there any procedure by which he could go back and amend his bankruptcy proceeding or in which he could stipulate to an offset here?
If he knew to do it, he simply didn't do it.
Okay, but in your proceeding before Judge Jones, did you have any thought? Was there any thought to going and saying, look, it looks like we've made a mistake here. Let's do substantial justice and concede the offset.
If we talk about my argument at summary judgment, I do remember mm-hmm. discussing that exactly what I just discussed with you. I'm not sure how to cure it. I don't remember my exact words were, but mm-hmm. certainly there has to be a mechanism to try to cure it. I'm not a bankruptcy attorney. I wasn't sure how to do it, but I did throw that out to Judge Jones as sure. I mean, you have to. It has to be fair for everyone. Mm-hmm. So no, did not do anything at that point. Judge Jones was against us.
When he's got a $60,000 debt to Unum that he's asked Unum that he's asking to have discharged, and he fails to disclose something that you're telling us now is worth several hundred thousand dollars, does seem like a pretty significant omission, doesn't it? And especially for Mr. Latin.
It would be a significant
maybe not for General Motors today, but
all I would say is that when you read question 9 and question 20 on the bankruptcy schedule, I don't think the layperson would understand that they're supposed to calculate, get a pencil paper out and calculate, okay, if you would pay me the $865, I will get this much minus the offset amount, I will put that in my bank. I mean, that's why I think in this particular case, his reliance on trust and taxes was appropriate. And there's nowhere to conceal.
Counsel, what's your response to opposing counsel's observation that Mr. Latin was pretty astute in listing his other exempt assets before he even talked to the trustee, but conveniently omitted this one asset, even as exempt?
I don't know. Your Honor, I don't think he knew that it would be an exempt asset because he never disclosed it. I mean, if he thought it was going to be an exempt asset, there would be no reason for him not to disclose it.
How would he even know to ask the question of the trustee as to whether or not it should be listed?
Because based on the affidavits in the record, Your Honor, the trustee asked him questions at the creditors' meeting, and Mr. Latin offered that information up so that he would fully disclose. And there's no reason to believe he would not have gone back and amended his debtors. Granted, he didn't do it. He should have done it. But is that enough to bar his claim based on judicial estoppel? Is it fair? Does it really further the integrity of the courts and maintain that integrity if this is not allowed to proceed? I would submit that it's not the case. It's not that these particular facts, and that's what the Supreme Court may really focus on. But look at the facts of each particular case.
Judge Jones is a former bankruptcy judge.
Yeah.
It seemed like he would have maybe some sensitivity to the whole question of omission here.
I would think so, too, Your Honor. I simply disagree with, I mean, I simply don't think he engaged in the balancing of the equities. And he simply, I believe, he did simply pull the language from Hamilton, from this court, Hamilton, and suggested that be created by a bright rule that, hey, failure to list that bars. You know, we're not going to go any further than that. We're not going to And I can look at advantage or disadvantage, or I can look at the items that Supreme Court, you know, the clearly inconsistent position. Has the court accepted that position? I mean, the court didn't discuss that. If the court had discussed that, then I think my job would be all the more hard before you today. I think Hamilton does apply. I just would say that as the district court in Oregon in the Procure case said, that you look at the Hamilton facts and the overarching principles underlying judicial estoppel, that in fact, Hamilton would require that this claim be remanded and proceed.
All right, counsel, thank you. You've exceeded your time. Thank you to both counsel. The case just argued is submitted for decision by the court.